A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 4th chapter, verses 17 to 34. Karna pitaya nirayat yadakalpaishe Tarma pitaya shinipir nigirasyamane Chindyat prasaya rishatim asatim kapushe Jiham asurna pitato shije satarama. Sati continued, if one hears an irresponsible person blaspheme the master and controller of religion, one should block his ears and go away if unable to punish him. But if one is able to kill, then one should by force cut out the blasphemer's tongue and kill the offender, and after that, one should give up his own life. So Daksha, what does the word Daksha mean? Expert. So he was very expert in materialistic activities, fruitive activities, yajna. But although he was very expert, he had one problem. He had a tendency towards pride. So I have a nice analysis here by Burijan Prabhu. Why are people proud? Who can tell me why is somebody proud? What is the cause of this pride? Yeah. They're attached to the body. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They lose sight of the real situation, which is only a very tiny.
Okay, they lose sight of the situation that we're very, very tiny. Mm-hmm.
They have materialist sense, like good birth, beauty, wealth.
Okay, good birth, education. So they have some material assets. So that's something to be proud of. Yeah. Yes, that's what Burijan says. They're insecure. And so Burijan Prabhu says that we feel like we're lacking something, but we don't know what that something is. So to plug up the hole in the heart, we become proud. That's what Burijan Prabhu says. I thought that was quite interesting. Actually, what we're missing is our relationship with Krishna. We're insecure, so therefore we're proud to cover up that insecurity. But if we plug the hole with pride, that won't satisfy us. Won't satisfy us. So yesterday, in the first part of this chapter, Sati was criticizing her father. Actually, she was thinking to mediate, but her mediation techniques weren't very good. They weren't according to the standard techniques. She compared Lord Shiva, who magnifies the good qualities he finds in a person, to Daksha, who finds bad qualities in good people. So remember the nice commentary we heard yesterday from Sridhar Swami was about Mahata, Mahatara, and Mahatma. Who is Mahata? He is great, yeah? They see the bad, but they only think of the good. So Mahatara. Who is Mahatara? They don't even see the bad qualities, right? Okay, and Mahatma magnifies the good qualities. Okay, magnifies. So Lord Shiva is Mahatma in the Sanskrit. Sanskrit word is Mahatma, and he magnifies the good. So he purifies everyone of sin. He's a friend of all living entities. He's easily pleased. He's worshipped by saints who aspire for Brahman. So how could Daksha be envious of him? So now Sati is so upset that she's ready to give up her life. So now she says, this is a very famous verse, it's quoted in Nectar of Devotion, what to do if you hear blasphemy. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that this verse describes three kinds of people. The Brahmana, the Kshatriya, and the Vaishya and Shudra are put in one category. According to the purport, what should a Brahmana do? Leave the place. A Brahmana should leave the place. What should a Kshatriya do? Cut out the tongue and kill. And what should a Vaishya or Shudra do? Give up his life. Okay, so Sati is putting herself in that category. So therefore, she's going to give up her life. Yesterday, Sankirtan Prabhu brought up the comment commented that this particular verse is used as evidence by those who think that Hare Krishna is a cult, the programmers in America. And this was when Prabhupada was here. They were harassing the devotees. There was a court case against Adi Keshava, who was in New York City. And they said, "We have heard if the Lord is blasphemed, you're supposed to either give up your life or leave or cut out the tongue. So why don't you do that now? We're blaspheming. So why don't you do that?" And then they said to the court, as one of the legal arguments, that they should put these devotees into the mental hospital for his own protection, because otherwise he'll go and kill himself. That's what they said. Or else they'll cut out somebody's tongue, or else they'll kill themselves. So in either case, they should be put in the mental hospital. So that was their legal argument. So they told Prabhupada that. And Prabhupada said, "No, you should just go away from the place." So that's actually what we should do. One devotee was preaching in Europe, and somebody in the audience was blaspheming, so he made this quote, and that really disturbed the audience. Anyway, it's not exactly our preaching platform. Prabhupada advises we should just leave the place. Yes?
Now we know what Prabhupada said, but if we don't know, if I don't follow now, that's the writing that I can do.
Yes. Well, Prabhupada's writing is a little different. Yeah. But anyway, yes, we have to have practical application, and that's why you need Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Those who were here when Prabhupada was here, that we have Prabhupada's conversations, which I quoted from. This is a room conversation in Mayapur, 1977. What's that? Were. Yeah. So we should not imitate. Or add. Yes.
I found at least one in the following purports, one of the aspects that explanation
is given. Which purport?
In verse 28.
Uh-huh, 28.
So the purport Prabhupada says, "It is not necessary for one to manifest a blazing fire externally."
Oh, yeah, right. Yes,
so
yes, that's right.
The application for us.
Yeah, very good application.
Yeah, that we should become situated in our spiritual identity. Because
right.
The idea is to burn the contamination that
right.
We have received from the offender. So he says, it is said that one who has been freed from all material contamination by the blazing fire of yogi, samadhi, or ecstasy, like that.
Right. So we have, our process is different. This chapter, verse 28, purport. 27, okay, 27, purport.
And this is also, he's quoting Jiva Goswami, who seems to have explained in his purport what is to be done. And Jiva Goswami also said that Sati quit her body means that she gave up within her heart her relationship with Daksha.
Right.
This is another indication of what.
Yes. Yeah. So we can do the internal work without having to have a blazing fire. Of course, we can't even manifest a blazing fire anyway. So it's no question of trying to do it. But for us, we can enter into the blazing fire of devotional service, Srila Prabhupada says. So let's go on to verse 18, 19. "Therefore, I shall no longer bear this unworthy body which has been received from you, who have blasphemed Lord Shiva. If someone has taken food which is poisonous, the best treatment is to vomit. 19. It is better to execute one's own occupational duty than to criticize others. Elevated transcendentalists may sometimes forego the rules and regulations of the Vedas, since they do not need to follow them, just as the demigods travel in space, whereas ordinary men travel on the surface of the earth." So now Sati is explaining Lord Shiva's behavior, why he's in the crematorium and why he's smoking all these things that he does, long hair. So Prabhupada says, "The behavior of the most elevated transcendentalist and that of the most fallen conditioned soul appears to be the same." So my question is, how is it that their behavior appears to be the same. The most elevated transcendentalist? In what sense, in what way, does the behavior of the most elevated transcendentalist and the most fallen conditioned soul appear to be the same? They don't follow rules and regulations. Well, this is certainly the case of Lord Shiva. He appears not to follow the rules and regulations. Although he's called Dharmavatsala, upholder of all rules and regulations, or dharma, how is it that the most elevated transcendentalist and that of the most fallen conditioned soul appears to be the same? How else are they similar? Vidura says in 3.7.17, this is not exactly behavior, but outlook. Yascha muratamo loke yascha bhure param gata tavubhavsukame tete krishatyantarito jana. Both the lowest of fools and he who is transcendental to all intelligence enjoy happiness, whereas persons between them suffer material pangs. So Prabhupada, in the purport, says, we'll continue, the elevated transcendentalist can surpass all the regulations of the Vedas, just as the demigods traveling in space surpass all the jungles and rocks on the surface of a globe. Although a common man who has no such ability to travel in space has to face all those impediments. So in Mahabharata, there was this time when the Pandavas wanted to go to a very inaccessible place in the Himalayas at the foothill of Kuvira's place. And because Bhima Prabhu had married a Rakshasi, they simply called her, and she and all the Rakshasas carried the Pandavas on their backs to this inaccessible place. So no human being could go, and they were in the bodies of, they were behaving as ordinary human beings, so therefore they had to do that. But here it says, a transcendentalist can surpass all the regulations of the Vedas. So what I would like to do is ask you, how did Srila Prabhupada do this? He was certainly an elevated transcendentalist, and how did he surpass the regulations of the Vedas? What was in his behavior? Yeah.
He crossed the sea.
Yes.
He initiated
women. Shudras. He gave sannyas to. Yes, so et cetera. So that's how he, that one way he surpassed all the regulations of the Vedas. Yes. Yeah, he stayed together with the materialists. They had meat in their fridge. So in so many ways, he did things that ordinary sannyasis would never do. They wouldn't think of doing it. Wouldn't think of doing what Prabhupada did. So Daksha found fault with Lord Shiva for not observing all the strict rules and regulations of the Vedas. So sometimes, even some Indians, they found fault with Prabhupada for not observing all the rules of the Vedas. They say, you're ruining Hinduism. You're polluting it. But Sati asserted he had no need to observe such rules. It is said that for one who is powerful like the sun or fire, there is no consideration of purity or impurity. So what's that verse, the Prabhupada? Ishopanishad 8. Okay, apavicham. There's another famous. Oma pavicha, pavicho va, sarvavastam, gatovi va. That's from the Padma Purana, I believe. Yeah, there's another verse that's very, very, Prabhupada quotes all the time from Bhagavatam. It's just one line from Bhagavatam, which is, he's paraphrasing here also, is tejiyasam nadoshaya. It's in 10th canto, spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, about Lord Krishna, who performed the rasa dance with other people's wives. It's in reference to Lord Krishna. So the sunshine can sterilize an impure place, whereas if someone else were to pass such a place, he would be affected. One should not try to imitate Lord Shiva. Rather, one should strictly follow one's prescribed occupational duties. One should never vilify a great personality like Lord Shiva. So somebody actually did that. We'll find out a little later in Bhagavatam. He didn't exactly blaspheme Lord Shiva, but he sort of criticized Lord Shiva for sitting with Parvati. Who was that? Chitraketu, yeah. So Chitraketu, Prabhupada explains that he never meant to insult Lord Shiva, but still he should not have criticized. His behavior was improper, even though the Lord was transgressing social customs. Again, Prabhupada quotes, Tejiyasam Nadoshaya. Third canto. It's not. This one is from 10. Tejiyasam Nadoshaya. It's from 10:33. I have it right here, actually. I have it here. So the problem with Chitraketu is that he had the darshan of Sankarshan, so he became a little proud. And incidentally, Sankarshan, he was Lord Shiva's godbrother, because they were both worshipping Sankarshan. So Chitraketu and Lord Shiva. But Prabhupada said, this kind of pride in a devotee is never tolerated. Yeah, I'll read you the verse. I have the quote here. It's 10:33:29. You looked it up. Yeah. Dharma vyatikramodishta ishvaranam chasahasam tejiyasam nadoshaya vahane sarvabhujo yatha. The status of powerful controllers is not harmed by any apparently audacious transgression of morality we may see in them, for they are just like fire which devours everything fed into it and remains unpolluted. So further, Sati will state in the next verse how they are beyond further regulations of the Vedas. Two types of paths in the Vedas. In the Vedas, verse 20, there are directions for two kinds of activities. Activities for those who are attached to material enjoyment and activities for those who are materially detached. In consideration of these two kinds of activities, there are two kinds of people who have different symptoms. If one wants to see two kinds of activities in one person, that is contradictory. But both kinds of activities may be neglected by a person who is transcendentally situated. So Brijan gives a nice example that rather than being criticized, Lord Shiva should be recognized as not needing to follow certain rules. So the example he gave, a PhD in philosophy doesn't have to take a beginner's philosophy course. So that's like Lord Shiva. He's a PhD. Why does he have to go to follow Daksha's rules? Daksha has to follow. The rules of Shastra are meant to set us on the path and make sure our path towards the goal are straight. But someone who's fully Krishna conscious, he may break the rules sometimes. So Daksha was criticizing Lord Shiva for not following the basic rules that Vedas prescribe for human beings. So Lord Shiva was way above these rules. So in the purport, Prabhupada discusses, is Lord Shiva a grihastha, or is he sannyasi, or what is he actually? What is the word that Prabhupada used to describe Paramahansa, exactly? So sometimes you may think he's a grihastha because he's married to Parvati, and sometimes you may think he's a sannyasi because he's exhibiting so much renunciation. But actually, he's neither. And that was why Sati was having trouble, because he's not an ordinary grihastha. She couldn't relate to him like an ordinary husband. He didn't like social life and all these things. So therefore, it was a bit of a problem because she was wanting some grihastha life. The Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva is in the transcendental position because, as stated before, he was always absorbed in the thought of Lord Vasudeva within himself. Therefore, neither the activities of grihastha nor those of sannyasi in the renounced order can be applicable for him. He is in the Paramahansa stage, highest perfectional stage of life. So one time Śrīla Prabhupāda was criticized when he was a grihastha. When Prabhupāda was a grihastha, he was criticized by some sannyasis that, he's not very advanced. He's not coming with us. He's not joining with us in our Gaudiya Math activities. But there was one devotee in the Gaudiya Math who understood Prabhupada's position. And he told the others that he is more than most yogis. Śrīla Prabhupada is more than any yogi. He may be dressing as a grihastha, but he's more than a yogi. So we could see that. And Prabhupada, when he was here with us, no yogi could do what Prabhupada did. Sleep so little, travel on the airplane. The yogis, they go to the Himalayas to avoid all these things. And Prabhupada was traveling, and he didn't care about jet lag, although it affected his servants quite a bit. But he just, wherever he went, he would just pick up his schedule as it was the day before. So here it talks about poverty and nivritti, two paths. So Narottam Das Thakur has sung in Prema Bhakti Chandrika about these two paths. He says, Karma kanda jnana kanda kevala visharabhanda amitabalaya jeva kai nana yoni sarafire kadaja pakana kare tarajanmara pate jai. So he says, this karma kanda and jnana kanda, pravriti and nivriti, simply pots of poison. And one who takes to such a life is doomed. So what is the problem with karma kanda? Why is it a pot of poison, actually? Drinking poison if you follow karma kanda. You get bound to the material world, you would say so? Solidifies it. Mm-hmm. And what do you say?
So many difficult rules
in karma kanda, yeah.
I think the ultimate reason that our acharya is saying that is because it takes you away from devotional service.
Takes away from devotional service. Okay, as opposed to the principles of bhakti. Well, that's a really nice point. Yeah, Prabhupada just said basically that you have to, if you take to karma kanda, you're destined to accept birth and death again and again. And like what Bhagavata said. So yes, but actually on a higher level, that it opposes devotional service. So that's why karma, jnana, anavritam. Is that right? Yeah. Jnana, karma, anavritam. Yeah. Bhogashraya prasaktanam. Tayaparita chetasam. 244. If you're too attached to these karmakanda and opulence, then you cannot resolute. Termination for devotional service does not take place, as Prabhuji pointed out. It's opposed to devotional service because you're too attached. And Gyanakanda. What's wrong with Gyanakanda? Yeah. Yes. Yes, one becomes non-entity or devoid of relationship with the Supreme. So Prabhupada, for Gyanakanda, he says, you fall down to this material world again. So only worship of Krishna offers safety of going back home, back to Godhead. So this is what is being said. He's beyond these two things. He's way beyond. So, but Daksha is simply concerned with Karmakanda.
There's another example of somebody who's coming,
Lord Shiva? Rikashura. Yeah, boy, that was more than an offense. Yeah, that's true. And he was killed. Chitraketu also, he became a demon in his next life. But that, of course, that's a whole other Leela. It was something behind it, so Krishna wanted him to come back quickly. So, verse 21. My dear father, the opulence we possess is impossible for either you or your flatterers to imagine. But she's really, really letting him have it. She said, you think you have opulence. You can't even imagine our opulence. It's like, we're much better than you. For persons who engage in fruitive activities by performing great sacrifices are concerned with satisfying their bodily necessities by eating foodstuff offered as a sacrifice. We can exhibit our opulences simply by desiring to do so. This can be achieved only by great personalities who are renounced, self-realized souls. So she's saying you have to work for your food. You have to work, you have to do all these sacrifices, follow all these rules. And we just desire, and we have whatever we want. Of course, he's thinking, oh, you're so poor, you're living under the tree. But actually, it's not like that. So what is actually, well, we'll read the purport, then I'll ask you a question. Sati's father was under the impression that he was exalted in both prestige and opulence, and he had offered his daughter to a person who was not only poor, but devoid of all culture. So low class. Poor doesn't necessarily mean devoid of culture, because the Brahmins were poor. But he's poor and he's low class. So this is what her father was thinking. Her father might have been thinking that although she was a chaste woman, greatly adherent to her husband was in a deplorable condition. To counteract such thoughts, Sati said, the opulence possessed by her husband could not be understood by materialistic persons like Daksha and his followers, who were flatterers and were engaged in furtive activities. Her husband's position was different. He possessed all opulences. So what were the opulences? What are the opulences of Lord Shiva, actually? Yeah. Dear to all.
Renunciation.
Renunciation. You remember from yesterday. Good. Anything else? Yeah. He owns the whole material world. He's a father. Yeah, so how can Daksha compare? He's just one of the children. Yes.
Topmost devotee.
That's his real opulence. His real opulence is spiritual, and Daksha is not even thinking that that's opulence. Many materialistic people, they see a renunciation and see a devotee. They don't understand. They think this is too bad. They feel sorry. Yeah.
Actually, the question arises now, why is Daksha envious?
Yeah. Well, that question came up in a previous purport. Prabhupada answered that question. Does anybody remember? That why should he be... Yeah, that question came up. Well, he has nothing. Why should he be envious? Parvati.
He has a very honorable position.
Yes.
And he envies the worshipers.
Yes, he has a higher position. He's a guna avatar.
So he has...
Yes, flatterers, yeah. Pardon me? Well, you know, he's envious of his position. Position. Yeah. But the followers, you know.
But his position is a
good man. No, his position is guna avatar.
Yeah,
well, that's what he's envious of, Prabhupada said. Because he gets more honor than he does. He gets more honor, yeah. He gets more honor. People honor Lord Shiva more than they do Daksha. So this is a big problem for Daksha. Madhudapuri. Yes, he's more advanced.
Well, that's the point, is he is not, he doesn't recognize
that.
Yeah, I mean, he does know. He knows that he's a more advanced devotee.
You can say they're both. The standard worship Shiva receives.
Yes.
Yes,
right. You know, how can he be so happy just under the tree, and I have to work, just like they criticize the devotees, I have to work so hard, and they're just happy. Yes, under the tree. Okay, yes?
Daksha can see, even indirectly, he can feel how everybody feels respect and love to Lord Shiva.
Yes, Lord Shiva is dear to
everyone. Such feelings from
right. Okay, and last one.
There's another point here in this verse that is pointing the wrong attitude of the Brahmins.
Wrong attitude of Brahmins.
They were afraid then.
Oh, yeah, I picked that up too, yeah.
In 11, say they are dependent, and here say
they're flatterers. They're flatterers.
The interesting material is that they think they can control everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Right. Yeah, so the Brahmanas were actually... Now, well, this is how Sati is seeing them. This is through Sati's eyes. And these people who are helping you, they're all flatterers. So we have to remember it, seeing through Sati's eyes. Not necessarily that they were, but this is how she's seeing. Yeah. No. Okay. So let's go on. He possessed all opulences, but he did not like to exhibit them. Therefore, such opulences are called avyakta, or unmanifested. But if required, simply by willing, Lord Shiva can show his wonderful opulences, and such an event is predicted here, for it would soon occur. So that he'll create a demon from his hair, like that, and finish Daksha. Daksha couldn't have imagined that Lord Shiva could do that. He thinks he has nothing. The opulence Lord Shiva possesses is enjoyable in renunciation and love of God, not in material exhibition of sense gratificatory methods. Such opulences are possessed by personalities like the Kumaras, Narada, and Lord Shiva, not by others. So Lord Shiva is in this category. What is this category called? Kumaras, Narada, Shiva? Mahajan. He's one of the 12 Mahajans. So, and then at the paragraph 3, Srila Prabhupada explains, why is Lord Shiva not without opulence? How do we know? Huh? Why is he not without opulence? In other words, why does he have opulence? Yeah, he's got his wife. His wife is the whole material energy. And that's what Prabhupada says here in paragraph 3. Whether or not King Daksha and his flatterers, so now Prabhupada is also saying they're flatterers, could understand the position of Lord Shiva, Sati wanted to impress upon her father that he should not think her husband to be without opulence. Sati, being the devoted wife of Lord Shiva, offers all kinds of material opulences to the worshippers of Lord Shiva. This fact is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Lord Shiva's worshippers sometimes appear more opulent than worshippers of Lord Vishnu, because Durga, or Sati, being the superintendent in charge of material affairs, can offer all material opulences to the worshippers of Lord Shiva in order to glorify her husband. So that's why she makes very quickly, if you worship Lord Shiva, you get the opulence, because she wants Lord Shiva to be glorified. But then Prabhupada goes on, whereas the worshippers of Vishnu are meant for spiritual elevation, and therefore their material opulence is sometimes found to decrease. These points are very nicely discussed in 10th canto. And that's why Vyaichi has no money. Because it's a bunch of Brahmins. What's that? Yes, curse of Bhrigu. Curse of Bhrigu. So then, we discussed this before that, there's one purport that's going to come up, 422.36. Prabhupada talks about Ravana. He was a great worshipper of Lord Shiva. In return, he got all the blessings of Goddess Durga, so much so, his whole kingdom was constructed of golden buildings. In Brazil, in the present age, huge quantities of gold have been found, and from historical references in the Puranas, we can guess safely that this was Ravana's kingdom. This kingdom, however, was destroyed by Lord Ramchandra. So some people say there was a tunnel from Lanka to Brazil. I've heard. Yes? Oh, you're from Brazil. Yeah, do you know anything? What's that? You're in. Okay. He wants to find the tunnel. If someone finds it. Okay. Rio de Janeiro. Utrecht. Is this where?
This is the stool. Uh-huh.
Kumbhakarna used to sit on the stool there. On the rock, okay. Anyway, there are connections. But the point is that Ravana got everything by the blessings of Durga and Lord Shiva. So in this magazine, there's an interesting passage here to understand what is the mercy of Lord Shiva and Maya Devi. Here it is said that in the material world, the Mayavadis worship goddess Maya and chant her names like Durga and Kali. So Maya is a shadow of his spiritual potency. Gradually purifying them, goddess Maya convinces the rebellious souls who have turned their faces away from Lord Krishna to turn and face him again. Now here's the important part. Maya has two kinds of mercy. Sakapata mercy, kripa. Sakapata kripa, mercy with cheating. And Nishkapata Kripa, mercy without cheating. So two kinds of mercy from Maya and also from Lord Shiva. When she gives sincere mercy, she gives the conditioned soul true knowledge and devotional service of Krishna. When she gives cheating mercy, she gives the soul temporary material pleasures. And the limit of this cheating mercy is when she throws the soul into the state of merging with impersonal Brahman. When that happens to the soul, all is lost. So then it is described that Lord Shiva also has two kinds of mercy, Nishkapata Kripa and Sakapata Kripa. So Sakapata means cheating mercy. So this is mercy with cheating. This is given to Ravana and Vrikashura. So who did Lord Shiva give Nishkapata Kripa, mercy without cheating to? There's somebody, very famous story, that Lord Shiva gave someone Nishkapata Kripa, mercy without cheating. Lord Shiva. A poor Brahmin, huh? Manasura. No, he gave him 1,000 arms. There was somebody else. There was a poor Brahmin who went to Lord Shiva. And if I tell you what he asked for, then you'll know who it is. He asked for, I want to have the highest benediction. So Lord Shiva said, okay, go to Sanatan Goswami. If you want the highest thing, the best thing. So he went to Sanatan Goswami, and first he got the touchstone. Yes, this must be it. Now I won't be poor anymore. So he went, and then he thought twice. But this touchstone was in the garbage. Must be something better that he's keeping. Went back. And Sanatan said, okay, I'll give you the best thing. Are you ready to take it? He said, yes. Lord Shiva told me I should go and find the best thing from you. So he said, okay, throw away your touchstone into the Jamuna River. And after he threw it away, he gave him Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So this is one example of Lord Shiva. Of course, the Prachetas we'll hear about in this canto. Lord Shiva gave them the highest also. He will teach them prayer of Lord Krishna. Yes.
The Brahmin to whom Gop Kumar was speaking.
From his wife. Okay, so the Brahmin to whom Gop Kumar was speaking got the Nishkapata Kripa from Lord Shiva's wife. Yes.
Also,
initiated. Okay, yeah.
Also to Arjuna.
Yeah.
He gave Arjuna what is the ball?
The weapon.
Pashupat.
Mm-hmm. Nishkapata Kripa. Anyway, because Arjuna is a devotee, whatever he gets, he'll use for Krishna. So therefore, he knew he gave it in the right hands. He gave this weapon. Okay, let's go on to verse 22. You are an offender at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva, and unfortunately, I have a body produced from yours. I'm very much ashamed of our bodily relationship, and I condemn myself because my body is contaminated by a relationship with a person who is an offender at the lotus feet of the greatest personality. So a purport in the middle. Prabhupada says, Vasudeva is a state from which Krishna Vasudeva is born. So Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, and Sati's behavior is exemplary because no one should tolerate blasphemy against Lord Vishnu or his devotees. Verse 23, because of our family relationship, when Lord Shiva addresses me as Dakshayani, I at once become morose, and my jolliness and my smile at once disappear. I feel very much sorry that my body, which is just like a bag, has been produced by you. I shall therefore give it up. 24, Maitreya the sage told Vidura, O annihilator of enemies, while thus speaking to her father in the arena of sacrifice, Sati sat down on the ground and faced north. Dressed in saffron garments, she sanctified herself with water and closed her eyes to absorb herself in the process of mystic yoga. So Prabhupada explains that this is the perfection of yoga. You can give up the body, release yourself from the embodiment of material elements according to your desire. So she's going to demonstrate this power to us. 25. First of all, she sat in the required sitting posture, and then she carried the life air upwards and placed it in the position of equilibrium near the navel. Has anybody ever practiced this type of yoga, Sat Chakra, where you bring the life air up? I know of somebody who did, but I don't know. You did, you practiced. Did you ever do that? Bring the life air, or is that just when you're going to die? One is bringing the prana, and one is awakening the kundalini. Different things. So some things you can do while you're still in the body, but the prana is meant for after. Is it to bring the prana up in? Can do it now too. Why? What's the use of it?
To Clean the channels. It cleans the channels, okay. Yeah, I know one devotee, she was practicing that yoga and she brought it all the way up. She was trying to leave her body, actually. She brought it up to here and then between the eyebrows, and then her instructor stopped her because they didn't want, you know, this to happen in their ashram. Somebody's going to die. So when he stopped her in the practice, then there was an explosion in her brain, and then she got a brain tumor from that, actually, just after that. So it's very dangerous to try. We don't advise imitating these things if you don't know what you're doing, because that can result in brain damage or death. So, what did I read? Verse 25. First of all, I started. She sat in the required sitting posture, and then she carried the life air upwards and placed it in the position of equilibrium near the navel. Then she raised her life air, mixed with intelligence, to the heart, and then gradually towards the pulmonary passage, the heart, yes, and from there to between her eyebrows. So now she's carrying the prana up through the different chakras so that she can leave her body. So near the end of the purport, Prabhupada explains that there is no need for us to do this. Any transcendental process of spiritual realization automatically helps one to keep the body fit, for it is a spirit soul that keeps the body always fresh. As soon as the spirit soul is out of the body, the material body immediately begins to decompose. Any spiritual process keeps the body fit without separate endeavor. But if one takes it that the ultimate aim of yoga is to maintain the body, then he is mistaken. The real perfection of yoga is elevation of the soul to higher position, or liberation of the soul from material entanglement. So last year we heard about a yogi in third canto who was practicing very severe austerities for many thousands of years, but he was not emaciated. And Prabhupada explains why. Even though he was doing such severe austerities, there is one reason why he didn't become skinny and emaciated. Who? No, third canto. Kardavamuni, yes. Kardavamuni. Because he got the darshan of the Lord, and because of that darshan, then his body was completely beautiful and effulgent. So here we see this leaving of the body, and Prithu Maharaj also. Prithu Maharaj is going to leave his body when he wants to. He will choose the time. And that's what the intelligent yogi does. And that's why he prolongs his life. That's why the breathing exercises. That's why holding the breath. So that if you're not ready to go back to Godhead or to go to where you want to go, you can prolong your life. And then when you're ready, you can just bring up the life air and escape. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting comment. That's what Prabhupada said. You dance in kirtan and you'll keep fit. Follow Ekadashi fasting is very healthy. Don't need to go to the gym or swimming pool. But that Prabhupada is saying that. He says that in Krishna book too, that before the devotees look very morose and unhealthy, and after they became devotees, they're shining and healthy. Why is it that we get sick? That's the question. Yes, why is that? Are they taking too much karma from other people? Yeah. Yes, we have our... Who is our in charge of health and welfare? Pralad Maharaj. He does yoga every day. Yeah, so do I. No, he swims, okay? So there's a philosophy for this. Whatever works, do it. Because we want to serve Krishna. And if you're like sitting at your computer the whole day, and that's your service, then you have to do something else. Yes, this is fast walking, right. Yeah, actually this happened when Prabhupada was very sick in New York. When doctors And when they brought one doctor, and he said, oh, the old man's praying too much. He's not getting enough exercise. And Prabhupada took it seriously. The doctor said, he's not walking enough. So then Prabhupada, from then he started his walking every day. And they say, just by walking, then this exercises all of your... It added 10 years to his life. Well, that was the 10 years that he preached, so that was good. The 10 years that we needed him added 10 years. That and the massage, he said. So we should we can follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. We can walk every day, have a japa walk. Yeah.
On a practical level, it talks to the ways of exercise and blessing.
It does so. It helps me too.
Yeah,
bounding. Okay, bounding. But now we have a suggestion, bouncing on the trampoline.
Yes.
He and Prahlada Namaraj. They carry their trampolines.
Of course, is that one of the biggest preachings that is coming in yoga.
Yes, true.
That's true. All over the world, the way it's set up, the yoga centers, it's such a big thing in the world.
Right.
I don't know. I'm sure there's some little things that I get.
Oh, no.
It's
wonderful preaching. So opening yoga centers is very good preaching.
LA,
yes, very big. Yeah, somehow or other, if we can, that's the philosophy. Somehow or other, we preach. We use everything. The Aditya Prakarena. That was Prabhupada's philosophy when he came to America, and he was saying even if I think Bhaktisiddhanta was saying even if you have to eat meat, you should go there and preach. If there's nothing else to eat, Prabhupada was worried, maybe there's nothing else to eat in America. Then he found there were so many nice grains and things. To who? Which? Shri Prabhupada said to? Harikesh. Oh, after Prabhupada went to Russia. Harikesh went to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he didn't want to leave Prabhupada. Right. They eat meat. He said, go back and eat meat, but you preach. Oh, this is Prabhupada. It's quite amazing. Yes.
Is somebody, Prabhupada just said so many different things at different times. There was that time, I forget which preacher was, I think it was Cuba. And there was somebody doing yoga.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the voices of Prabhupada, look at that.
Look at that. Waste of time. It's very good, yes. It's good, yeah. And the memories twice, Prabhupada, we brought that up last year, twice he said, no, this is good. And one devotee asked him, should I do it, Prabhupada? He said, yes, it's okay. But don't preach like that, yeah.
The
Book of Memories.
Nanda Kumar asked Prabhupada about exercise.
Yes, Nanda Kumar asked Prabhupada about exercise.
And Srila Prabhupada personally showed him push-ups.
Oh.
This is
very good for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, you do push-ups, very good for brahmachari life.
He
showed him personally. Nanda Kumar. And Nanda Kumar, he wanted to have a fruit diet. He wanted to have a fruit diet, right? Nanda Kumar also, I remember that. He says, you know, I can't eat this cooked food. I just like to eat fruits. And Prabhupada said, yes, it's actually very good for you. But don't tell everybody else that. You know, for you, it's okay. Yeah, did you have something to say? Yes. If you're happy in devotional service, then your health will be good. Yes. This is, yes, okay. That's what Prabhupada means. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he followed this yogic process. He merged all the elements backwards into the cause to reach the soul. But Prabhupada said, actually, although that's what it says, actually he absorbed himself in thinking of Lord Krishna and devotional service. And the layers dissolved by intense devotional service. So verse 26, thus, in order to give up her body, which had been so respectfully and affectionately seated on the lap of Lord Shiva, who is worshipped by great sages and saints, Sati, due to anger towards her father, what a way to leave, began to meditate on the fiery air within the body. Just see her, the anger helped her to do it. She was kind of pushed by the anger. So she did this. Five lines down. Prabhupada gives us a warning. One should be extremely careful about associating with persons who are not respectful to the higher authorities. It is instructed, therefore, in the Vedic literature, one should always be free from association of atheists and non-devotees and should try to associate with devotees, for by the association of a devotee, one can be elevated to the platform of self-realization. This injunction is stressed in many places in Srimad Bhagavatam. If one wants to be liberated from the clutches of material existence, then one has to associate with great souls. If one wants to continue in material existential life, one may associate with persons who are materialistic. Did you learn a verse last year from Devahuti? Prasanga majaram pasham. Kavayo atmano vidu, something like that. Sa eva sadhu sukrito mukshatara mabhavatam. Mahat sevam tamodaram yoshitam sangi sangam. Prabhupada, in a lecture on Gita in London, was talking about Bhaktivedanta Manor and the effects of association. He said before, this manor was known as Pigott's Manor, and now it is called Bhaktivedanta Manor. So what's the difference? Before it was used for sense gratification, and now it's used for elevation. So that's, there's satsanga and there's asatsanga. Two things. So there's a nice verse from 11th canto by Lord Krishna himself. I'll just recite it for you. Tato dusanga mutsrija satsusa jita buddhiman sandevas chindanti manavya sanga muktivi. Intelligent person should therefore reject all bad association. Instead, take up association of saintly devotees whose words cut off the excessive attachment of one's mind. So this is the effect. So therefore we desire, and we actually, we're very fortunate because we have the association of so many mahatas, mahataras, and mahatmas in this class. Very, very fortunate to have this association. So verse 27, Sati concentrated all her meditation on the holy lotus feet of her husband, Lord Shiva, who is the supreme spiritual master of all the world. Thus, she became completely cleansed of all taints of sin and quit her body in a blazing fire by meditation on the fiery elements. Adi Purush, can you do that? Quit your body in a blazing... No, okay, you didn't get that far. I was just wondering. Okay. So Sati could do it. She had that yogic perfection. And we must also leave our bodies in a blazing fire of devotional service. So Prabhupada said, as you said before, it is not necessary for one to manifest a blazing fire externally. For if one forgets all his body relationships within this material world and becomes situated in his spiritual identity, it is said that one has been freed from all material contamination by the blazing fire of yogic samadhi or ecstasy. So then, Prabhupada tells how to do that. 2.4.15, Yakirtanam, Yatsmaranam, Yadikshanam, simply by chanting the holy name of Supreme Personality of Godhead, simply remembering the lotus feet of Krishna, simply by offering prayers to Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is immediately freed from material contamination, material bodily concept by the blazing fire of ecstasy. This effect takes place immediately without a second's delay. So we're all waiting for this blazing fire of ecstasy. At least I think we are. So actually what Prabhupada is saying here, it's not necessary to leave your body, and he'll say that later on. But he's saying we have our ways of quitting the body even while we're still in the body. Of course, that's my goal. But how do we do that? How can we leave our body while we're still in the body? What does that mean? Lord Brahma, yeah. Yes, give up the... It's a subtle. It's a, give up the subtle mentality. We have all these subtle coverings and subtle mentalities.
The example is of the coconut.
Yes, coconut. The coconut's cut off from the tree, and it may still be wet in the beginning, but eventually it dries up and you can hear it. Rattling. Yes.
Give up attachments and false designations.
That's how we can quit our body while being in it. Actually, sannyas is civil suicide. You're actually a dead man when you take sannyas. You have no connection with your family. Or, huh?
No bank accounts.
No bank accounts. Okay. So, yes.
But according to Prabhupada, sannyas also some designation.
Yeah.
I'm sannyasi.
That's right.
I'm making my some.
Yeah, but that's not my point. Was that Sannyasa is a way of quitting the body. It's a way of quitting the body. All designations. Sannyas. But also there's another positive meaning. That's like there's a negative and a positive. So the negative side is you're not this. You're free from all of this. So the positive side is something else for sannyas, satyas.
Dedicate
your life to Krishna. So that's the real meaning. Prabhupada, in a lecture on Bhagavad Gita, said, real sannyas, sat, nyas, two words. You give up nyas, you give up everything for sat, or Krishna. Krishna is sat. Sat, sannyas, is, Prabhupada divided it into sat, nyas. Give up, nyas, give up everything for the cause of sat.
Or,
give up. No? Renounce. Or put down.
Put aside.
Okay, sannyas. Sannyas. So that's why the children of the sannyasi, they have no legal hold over anything. Of course, the sannyasi is not supposed to have property. Now, Prabhupada, before he left, he transferred all his property. That he had, anything he had in his name, he transferred to ISKCON. So here, in the last paragraph, according to Sri Jiva Goswami, that Sati quit her body means she gave up within her heart her relationship with Daksha. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also comments, since Sati is the superintendent deity of the external potency, when she quit her body, she did not get a spiritual body, but simply transferred from the body she had received from Daksha. Other commentators also say, she immediately transferred herself into the womb of Menaka, her future mother. She gave up the body she had received from Daksha, immediately transferred herself to another, better body, but this does not mean that she got a spiritual body. So even though she manifested so much power, she didn't get a spiritual body because it's her identity is as the external energy of Krishna. So therefore, she got another material body to be reunited with Lord Shiva. Verse 28. When Sati annihilated her body in anger, there was a tumultuous roar all over the universe. Why had Sati, the wife of the most respectable demigod, Lord Shiva, quit her body in such a manner? So Prabhupada in the purport explains that she had everything, either from her father's side or from her husband's side. She had everything. So why did she do this? So Prabhupada said, still, for some reason, she was dissatisfied. And we see that people have everything. Oh, who is that? Somebody in... Oh, yeah, that great fighter, Muhammad Ali, who is now retired. Some devotee told me he was going to preach to Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali was very happy to see the devotee. He was saying, you know, before I was so poor... And I had nothing. I was always thinking, oh, I wish I had a really nice house and servants and cars. And he says, now I have a really nice house and servants and cars, but still I'm not happy. And so, therefore, he liked the devotees' association. I can't remember who that devotee is. Oh, it's Bhaktisir Swami. What? Yeah, I heard that. Yes. Oh, he used to meet...
He had all the books.
And
then we sold him a button with
Prabhupada. Oh. Okay. Okay, so there we go. Just see. Association of Devotees in the airports. Made him go to take shelter. I don't know if he's taking shelter, but at least he's appreciating the Association of Devotees.
No, we don't remember anything.
Just imagine, from one extreme to the other. Before he was so powerful in his body, he was known for his strength. And so Parvati said that's the hazard of having your brains beat out. Okay, Parkinson's disease. So yeah, it's a reaction. Obviously it's a reaction to what you do in this life. I mean, he got it quickly. So where are we? 28. Oh, it says, still she was dissatisfied. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam explains... One has to achieve real satisfaction. Yayatma supersedity. Did Prabhupada say that or did I put that in?
Yeah.
I put it in. He said it. Okay. Explains Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam explains one has to achieve real satisfaction, yayatma supratiditi, but atma, the body, mind, and soul, all become completely satisfied only if one develops devotional service to the absolute truth. So this is the problem with the other paths. You may satisfy your body by one path, may satisfy your mind by another path, your intelligence, but only devotional service can satisfy body, mind, and intelligence and everything. And so, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atayu Shanta. Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Shakali Ashanta. Yes. Everyone else is Ashanta. 29. It was astonishing that Daksha, who is a Prajapati, maintainer of all living entities, was so disrespectful to his own daughter Sati, who was not only chaste but was also a great soul, that she gave up her body because of his neglect. So Maitreya is having choice words for Daksha here. Now Maitreya is speaking, and this is very astonishing, unheard of. And the Sanskrit word he uses, what is the Sanskrit word he uses to condemn Daksha, which Prabhupada picks up in the purport? Anatmya. He is not, Atmya means the life of the soul. So he is the death of the soul. He is not the life. This is Maitreya. Prabhupada says this word indicates, although Daksha appeared to be living, actually, he was a dead body. Otherwise, how could he neglect Sati, who was his own daughter? So his heart was dead. So this was the problem. And this will be said in the next verse. Daksha, who is so hard-hearted he was unworthy to be a Brahmin, will gain extensive ill fame. So this is a prediction of Maitreya. Because of his offenses to his daughter, because of not having prevented her death, and because of his great envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he envied Lord Shiva. Well, how did he envy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Why? How did he envy the Supreme Lord? Yeah. Yes. As we discussed yesterday, devotees are in the heart of the Lord. So if you envy the devotees, then the Lord gets heart pain. Pain in the heart. So three reasons for his ill fame: offenses to his daughter. So this point we should also take to heart, that someone may be your junior, but you can still make offenses and suffer for that. If someone is your junior, either spiritually or materially. And this will also be in the next Leela, that a child will be offended. And for that, the offender will die. So Prabhupada says, Daksha is described here as most hard-hearted, therefore unqualified to be a Brahmin. Brahma Druk is described by some commentators to mean Brahma Bandhu or friend of the Brahmins. And we know what that means. So therefore we'll read it, we'll jump to the end of the purport. Prabhupada says, thus his ill fame still continues. As we are hearing about him now, all the problems, it still continues. As we are discussing about this, Daksha means expert, and he was given this name because of his ability to beget many hundreds and thousands of children. That was his expertise. Expert. Persons who are too sexually inclined and materialistic become so hard-hearted because of a slight loss of prestige that they can tolerate even the death of their children. So this is, their children are the most dear thing to the parents. But if you're a materialistic person, then they are killing the children in the womb. So this is so many Indian people also tell me, oh, my mother told me I should kill the child, but I thought, no, I'll keep it. When I was having my child in Bombay in the hospital, one of the ladies who was had a son also the same day, she said, yeah, my mother told me to kill it, and I took some medicine, but it didn't work. And then I thought, okay, anyway, I have two daughters. He's a son. Let him survive. So this is Kali Yuga. India. And he was a boy, and usually they want boys. So, you know, the daughters they kill, but the boys they want. So this, in milk. Anyway, whatever. And we don't want, in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, we don't, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, these things are going on. That they are killing their children in Kali Yuga. So this is such a... The Prabhupada says, people are too sexually inclined, materialistic. become so hard-hearted they can tolerate even the death of their children because they want to keep their position, so they kill the child. And somebody else told me, yes, my mother tried to kill me, but I survived. So this is Kali Yuga. 31. While people were talking among themselves about the wonderful voluntary death of Sati, the attendants who had come with her readied themselves to kill Daksha with their weapons. They came forward forcibly, but Bhrigumuni saw the danger, and offering oblations into the southern side of sacrificial fire, immediately uttered mantric hymns from the Ajurveda by which the destroyers of yogic performances could be killed immediately. 33. When Bhrigumuni offered oblations in the fire, immediately many thousands of demigods named Ribhus became manifested. All of them were powerful, having achieved strength from Soma, the moon. End of the purport. Prabhupada says Vedic mantras are still available, but the chanters are not. So we have all the Vedic mantras, we can do it. Why not? Because nobody can pronounce the mantras. By chanting Vedic mantras or chanting the Gayatri or Rig mantra, one can attain the results one desires. In the present age of Kali, it is recommended by Lord Chaitanya, simply by chanting Hare Krishna, one can attain all perfection. So again and again, this is the emphasis in these purports, all about yajna. So Prabhupada makes sure, no, it's Hare Krishna. That's the yajna for this age. 34. When the Ribhu demigods attacked the ghosts and guyakas with half-burned fuel from the yajna fire, all these attendants of Sati fled in different directions and disappeared. This was possible simply because of Brahma Tejas, Brahminical power. So, purport. Prabhupada says, the word Brahma Tejasa used in this verse is significant. So what's the significance of Brahma Tejasa? Powerful, yeah. They could bring the animal back to life. Put the animal in the fire, chant a mantra, the animal becomes alive in a new body. Put an old animal in, and it comes out young. So this is the power of the Vedic mantras. They don't do that. No, they don't do that. You say, why not? She's saying, why not human instead of animal? Yeah, when I was preaching in Russia, I got this question. Do we allow human sacrifices? Huh? Yeah, okay. Yeah, what? Human, yes. There was an example in Ninth Canto of Shunashepa. And it was supposed to be Harish, it was supposed to be somebody else. But then he bought a human being to substitute for himself and got, but then he saved himself actually. He wasn't sacrificed. So everything came out. Well, of course he's dead now, but at that time he didn't want to. Yeah.
My question is, what happens to the unsuccessful ones?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So, Vajrabihari Prabhu's question is, what happens to the unsuccessful, the animals or the people who do it?
Both.
The unsuccessful animals and the unsuccessful people who do these sacrifices. What happens? Yes.
That's why Buddha came.
And in this canto, the same thing will be found. Prachinabarhi. He's into animal sacrifice like anything. And Narada has come to stop him. And I think he even shows him, these, even though he was doing it properly, he said, just see all the animals you've killed, they're waiting in the sky. You know, even if you do it properly, it's still violence. What's that? I don't know if that's, anyway. They're waiting to retaliate. Yeah, the sky one was somebody else, it was the hunter. But yeah, they're waiting to retaliate for what you've done. He was doing sacrifices all over the earth, Pachinabarhi, materialistic fruitive like this. And so therefore Narada came to enlighten him that this is not proper, even though it's according to Varnashram and according to Vedas, you shouldn't do this.
If you want to speak to somebody like a Stalin or Pol Pot,
yeah.
Imagine,
yeah, you can imagine how many births as a worm or whatever. Manangopal Prabhu, did you have something to say? What? Guru Busters. No, I never heard of it.
This fellow who was supposed to be able to chant mantras to be able to revive animal life by a
Okay, so they got this guy, Guru Busters.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And they chanted, they got a dog and they got a poisonous snake. They let the snake bite the dog.
The dog. They had the snake bite the dog.
Yeah, and he started chanting all of the mantras.
Mantras.
So to revive that animal.
Yeah.
So it didn't work.
Didn't work. Okay. Died. Just died. But there are people who can...
On TV.
But there are people who can actually counteract the snake bite if a snake bites you or a scorpion bites you. And some Muslim guys in Mayapur.
Because,
yes? Yeah, this was... Yeah, but if you're alive and the snake bites you, they can help you survive. There are people who know mantras and things to do. Of course, you have to go to Mayapur for that. Well, we don't want to find out.
Because they made the experiment with the dog, it didn't work. So.
Yeah, well, we don't want to find out if the person is going to survive anyway after being bit by a scorpion or snake. They rushed, you know, so one guy had a motorcycle, he rushed, one child got bit, and he rushed him to the snake charmer. Actually, it was even Radhakund, my friend who did book distribution. She got bit by a snake while she was out on book distribution, traveling Sankirtan. She told me, and her leg was swelling up and swelling up for 3 weeks. She had it. She didn't die, but her leg wasn't getting better. So she went to one of these snake charmers, and they immediately got it, made it okay. I don't know. I'm sure. I'm sure we do, but I don't know who it is. But if anyone finds out. You can give them the Gurukul address, right? Yeah. Okay. But in Mayapur, it's Muslims, yeah? We do. Very powerful, yeah. Never fails. Yeah. Snake charms. You can try those guys who have the basket. I don't know. Okay, you can go to Parvati. She's got homeopathic remedies in case you get bit. Snake charmer, Parvati. Okay. So I think, why don't we just stop here? Because there's so much discussion anyway, so I'll throw all my notes out the window and we'll just have discussion. Yes?
What were the three people that actually offended? Was his daughter, God, Shiva, and...
The three offenses. Offense
Brahma.
To his daughter.
Brahma.
Brahma. Mm-hmm. Is that in the list? Let's see, what verse was that? There are three reasons for his ill fame. Offense to his daughter, not having prevented his death, her death, and envy of the Supreme Lord. This was verse 30. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions or comments or discussion? Yeah, you can clean the board while you're waiting. Yeah. Text 30.
Since here it's the word daksha refers to envy and possibly not only in Yadya, but it seems like it's that expertise is referring to being
Prajapati. Well, he is chief of the Prajapatis, and for good reason.
So is that on the verse?
What refers to connection to Yadya?
Daksha.
Expert, yeah.
Expert in Yadya and having children.
Yeah. I would say, it probably did say that somewhere else, that he's expert in fruitive activities. How is the yogi? Well, both of them are for the purpose of creation. He's born in the beginning of creation. So the needful in the beginning of creation is you need population to fill the universe.
That's the yogi itself.
Yeah, it's yogi also. And then there's the yogi to please, if you're going to have children, then you need to feed them. So the yogi is for the necessities of life, as Bhagavad Gita says. You will get all necessities by performing yogi. And pleasing Vishnu?
Aryan,
yes. In the purport of 30. Okay, I'm worthy to be called an Aryan or Brahmana. Aryans came from? Well, actually, he said, but previously to being in Central Asia, well, previously he said that when Parashuram was here, then the Aryans, they fled all over the world. So they fled to different places.
So you're saying that there was a stage where the Aryans were named in Bara?
Yeah.
And then they went to the Central
That's what Prabhupada says.
And from there again, they left.
What do you think? Brajabihari has another opinion.
So it says here from Central Asia, the Caucasian range, they divided. One went to the Indra, India, and one went to Europe.
Where's, which purport is this?
Melbourne, April 21st, 1976.
Oh, you've got a lecture. Okay.
So, how is that? Anybody here is aware of that? How is that going along with the historians who say that same thing?
What do they say?
Most historians say that. It
starts
the
there.
The Sanskrit language, its origin is an Indo-European language.
Indo-European.
And we don't believe that, obviously, say, oh, it's a Devanagari.
Yeah.
And no other origin than the places to be any of. So the place of the spoken language, unknown language, that something preceding Sanskrit, was always also said is to Europe or central.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to this.
I hear it says about the Aryan invasion.
Aryan invasion, the most good Aryan invasion.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
That some say there is.
No, Hare Krishna is not.
Aryans with those were advanced, so the Aryan family, the history of Aryan family from Central Asia, Caucasian range, is very divided. Indo-Aryans, Indo-Europeans. So the Europeans, so most of the Kshatriyas, they came to Europe, and some of them settled in the middle, the border of Europe, and then Turkey, Greece, and so on. So, the modern Indologists, they claim that they came here from Europe.
Oh, right.
From Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Whereas Shilmurvada says, no, they were divided and they went through Europe from the
There's a place called Harappa. There's a place called the historical place of Harappa. So how is that connected? That was a central ancient place?
It's something that they might excavate by the modern.
Okay.
So
maybe.
I found no evidence that there's a sense of language. But we found some stamps with Yogi figures.
Okay.
So we're finding the bits and pieces.
So you can send it to him, maybe. Send him the quote.
The whole thing about the folio.
The folio.
Klaus Pastelmeier's article in 1998.
Who's? Whose article?
Klaus Klosterman.
I can't see it, pronounce the name.
Scholar. Yeah.
Some scholar. Okay, so if you want to look it up in folio. Okay, Madhavan Puri Prabhu. What? Which Muni?
Kashyap.
Oh, yeah, Kashyap. Caspian, yeah, Caspian Sea. Central Asia, okay. Okay.
This is Bhagavatam 1845.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions or comments?
What's the
conclusion? Conclusion is, Prabhupada says, Central Asia. There was the origin of the Aryan race, and they split, and some went to Europe, and some went to India.
And Prabhupada's point, at least in one lecture, was therefore you and I are of the same stock.
Yeah. Indo-European stock.
That's the point of Prabhupada. We all know it's the Aryans, now we forgot.
Yeah. So he's reviving.
From Ireland, from back to the Aryans.
That's
and
right.
Of course, we should know the word Aryan doesn't have very good connotations in most people's minds in the world because Hitler used it,
right. Because he said Germans are Aryans, right?
And he wanted to reestablish the Aryan race, so we should be careful what we're using.
Using the word Aryan. No, he did. Well, he didn't. I mean, obviously, he didn't want to make the Jews Aryan.
One devotee was selling much on Bhagavatam set.
Yeah.
The seller was closing. The ministry was writing the check.
Writing a check.
And just saying, oh, you will see it's all about the Aryan race.
Shh.
She canceled it.
She canceled it.
So that reminded me of it.
Yeah. Okay, any more comments or questions? Otherwise, Bhagavad is ready with her mind map on chapter 3. Can somebody bring the blackboard inside? You need to.
Which side first?
Which side do you want first?
Doesn't matter.
It's all one. So she's done a mind map for each personality in chapter 3. So you do it by personalities. She has done. Everyone has a different outlook. Prashanta did quite differently with themes and other things, and she's doing it by personalities. Prashanta did it one day in class, at the end of class. I don't know where you were. You might have it. She did for chapter 2. And Bhagavat's doing chapter 3, and then Madhavendra Puri Prabhu with chapter 4. Okay, we'll see how it goes. If there's time. I think so, it should be. There's not much discussion tomorrow, I think, because it's just, you know, destruction. What can you say about destruction? So you have any words for us, or is everybody just supposed to look at it and... Okay, it's self-explanatory. Everybody can look at it and see what you want to figure it out yourself. It's not very difficult, I think. There's Lord Shiva over there and all the qualities. And here's Daksha, his qualities.
This is chapter
3.
It's a way of summarizing chapter 3.
It's a summary of chapter 3 according to personalities. So you see, no two mind maps are going to be the same. Everybody has a different view, a different angle of vision. And you'll have different ways of seeing the chapter. And remembering what's there. So we have Daksha, Shiva, and now we'll see Sati. Different points of view. Different storyline, okay. This is a storyline then. Yeah. So this is a mind map of the storyline according to personalities. So there's Sati. Different arguments. Digital camera. So everybody can, you can take it with your mind. Take a picture with your mind and store it in your subconscious. And someday it'll come up. Does anybody have any more discussion on today's class? Yeah. She saw it that way.
She saw it that way.
Yeah.
Because it was part of Daksha. Because
it was from him. So it's not that it was. But that's how she felt. It's from her point of view, my body is. Because then, you know, then I have to be called Dakshayani. Dakshayani. My husband calls me that and I think, oh no, it reminds me of Daksha. In her mind, it was the symbol. Yeah. Yeah, she's half, and the other half is Daksha's. Half and half. Half belonged, half was Daksha's, and half was Shiva's. Really, but then he refers to her, and she's still attached to her father. She had that attachment, so she wanted to cut it. Yes, he does, but the daughter still keeps the attachment. And they go back and forth and back and forth.
Well, but since in the Bhagavad, that it's half-half.
Yeah.
He belongs half-half. And the father is more worshipable.
The father is more worshipable. Okay.
Question.
Yeah.
Question. Her reasons for picking up the body.
Yeah.
Was it out because she felt contaminated?
Yeah.
Bodily connection? Or for the old insults spoken that she was listening?
Okay, his question is, did she give up the body because of her, she felt it was her bodily contamination associated with Daksha, or because of the offense that Daksha gave? Because she heard the offense. Which was it? Is your question. Yeah. I would say both. One led to the next.
Another point is that her giving up the bodies, but the suicide is the example of what suicide is. So her example doesn't support her position that one should leave the body. But she doesn't suicide against another body. I mean, in a sense, she has a will.
Well,
she has a clear understanding of what she does.
But the thing is that suicide is a term that refers to this life.
Yeah, but suicide is most common.
Yeah, in that sense, it's not suicide, but yeah. in other senses, it is suicide, that you kill yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you could be saying as an example of what everybody is supposed to be doing, but I mean, not being able to defeat somebody, you know, not being able to...
So, Sankara, you're saying it's...
Why should Sugar, Prabhupada said, they should have to give up their body?
Well, Prabhupada said, better just leave the place. We follow... Yeah, but for us, we leave the place, Prabhupada said, later on. Better just to leave. Because we're not Brahman, Vaishya, and Shudra anyway. We're followers of Prabhupada.
Should we glorify the sati decision to reach your body? It was not any other solution for this situation.
Okay, your question is, that there is, was there no other solution? Did she have to do this? Was there something else she could do instead of leave her body?
Well, she was supposed to be taken birth from the house, the daughter of Himalaya, and
Well, it was going according to some leaders. Plans,
yeah, is it a leader?
Okay, so there's two questions here. Couldn't she have done something else, and perhaps was it Leela that she was meant to be born? Of course, the Leela is always going on. But I don't think she was thinking, okay, now it's time to end my Leela here and move on to the next. And it wasn't, that's not how she was thinking.
Do we actually say that in terms of demigods or actually Leela?
Do we say that demigods perform Leela?
Because actually she was also affected by his daughter's death. It was some very slight influence of him. He was seeing this. Was not so much influence to
keep right.
That is meeting body.
Then, actually, later on it will be. At this point, it doesn't affect him, but later on he'll be affected. It did actually do something. It did actually.
But
later on, in the ultimate.
I'm feeling such sorry that such things happen.
Anyway, was it the question actually that I think that we're trying to figure out is, was this action justified by sati? Was it justified for her to do this? Was she justified? Yeah. Okay, she failed in her mission as mediator. Right? Vrajavihari Prabhu? She failed in her mission, so she... Yes.
You say she cannot tolerate being in this body because she's being referred to as Dakshayani, and he is a standard.
She couldn't tolerate to live anymore in that body. And death happens when you cannot tolerate to live in the body anymore. So generally it's the physical you cannot tolerate, but for her it was on a subtle. And these demigods are on a subtle level. So it's just the same. It's just as painful for them something on this level as for us the physical. Yeah.
Besides, it also was beneficial for Daksha helping.
Yeah, it was beneficial.
Because she speeded up the events. He could have gotten his reaction.
Well, he's saying the question. Well, now we know who shoes. Okay.
You could have gotten a reaction after a very long time.
That's true.
But she implicated him in her suicide because he didn't prevent her.
Yeah.
And so the reaction came immediately and he could realize his mistake quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she helped it, helped make it happen faster. Otherwise, he would have been suffering in hell for so many births or whatever. Whatever natural reaction would have come.
He was in hell.
Yes. And by having the goat's head, too. It's not very... After being the chief of the Prajapatis and become a goat, it's not very... In the same body. Just imagine. Yeah. Okay. Okay, what was his point? You say it again.
She helped him realize his mistake.
She helped him to realize more quickly.
Yeah.
Chakshusha. Yeah. Yeah, without that, he wouldn't even have gotten to that point. Okay.
So in the sixth temple, actually, you did
the Shakshi Shamanu. Yes, in Shakshi Shamanu.
This is 6 manus.
Yeah, 6 manus. He'll be coming back after 6 manus. And we'll have a repeat. Repeat of the same thing, creation and offending a Vaishnava. Okay, any other questions or comments on this lila? If not, then we'll stop here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.